Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's that time of the week. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our man Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, what's going on, man? How we doing?
What's going on, fellas? Arthur Smith has been requested for 17 more head coaching interviews since I got on the call last week. Everybody on earth wants to talk to him.
It's amazing. They must have been listening to you, Charles, on the show last week and said, you know what? We'll show that, Charles Robinson. We're going to interview Arthur Smith for every head coaching job on the planet. Seriously, like of all the rumors coming out where apparently Arthur Smith is going to be at least interviewed for all six of these head coaching vacancies, what do you make of his chances to actually land one of these jobs, considering he's apparently a really hot candidate around the league?
Right. Well, two things happened that two openings happened that I wasn't entirely sure about last week. I think the fact that Anthony Lynn got fired despite winning four into the close, and then with the Los Angeles Chargers, and then Doug Marrone getting axed in Jacksonville, they were giving weird signals right into last week. You know, that increasing the pool to six definitely helps Arthur Smith. But what I thought was interesting, Joe and I were kind of texting about this. I reached out to a couple of GMs who had gone through their own coaching searches, and I asked them to shape up the candidate field. And interestingly enough, both of them ranked Arthur Smith as they thought he's the number one candidate in the field over Brian Daboll, which, you know, surprised me a little bit. I thought Daboll was – if you had asked me last week, who do you think is going to be the guy who's going to be on every single list? I think Daboll is going to end up on every single list. I think right now he's on four. I think he's got four requests in. I asked one in particular who, you know, he did a lot of work on Matt LaFleur, some of the younger guys that are on these lists. And you know, he said, look, scheme versatility is a really big deal. And, you know, he said, you want to have a guy who, if you got a, you know, if you have a power running game, that's going to help you a lot. If you got a guy who, you know, can turn a quarterback into a, you know, 4,000 yard passer in his, you know, scheme and still run the football, that's a huge thing. He actually invoked Kevin Stefanski. He said, you know, go look at what Kevin Stefanski has done in Cleveland. If you look at their balance of games this year, that's a team that, you know, really is sort of a power running team at their best. He said, but they do have the ability to employ tight ends and wide receivers in a way that it's not out of bounds for Baker Mayfield to be a consistent 4,000 yard quarterback once they really get everything running. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And as I told Joe yesterday, I'm like, look, I don't know if any coaching candidate gets six interviews. And you know, A, I don't know if a coach takes all six, which is kind of interesting. And then B, I just don't know how you do six interviews with six openings and you don't land one, particularly if you got a couple of GMs, two out of 32. And I'd probably say three out of 32 if you ask John Robinson, who probably think he's the top in the field, top candidate in the field.
So do you have a feel for what a team that might really fancy him or what a team that might fit him best?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to say because, you know, you have with a number of these teams, you know, the quarterback situations are up in the air. The Atlanta Falcons, you know, Matt Ryan is going to be a decision. You know, Detroit Lions, obviously Matt Stafford is going to be a decision, although I'm already kind of hearing that he's, you know, probably gone. You know, other than maybe the Houston Texans, Jacksonville, obviously you're going to draft Trevor Lawrence at this stage. You know, the Chargers, with Justin Herbert are nailed down. The Jets have a huge decision to make at quarterback. I don't know that I would just say, hey, you know, here's this one position that absolutely is the right one for him. The one thing I would say about the Jets' interest is the Jets are going to interview like everybody under the sun. They're asking for everybody. It's kind of crazy. And, you know, so I would say, I wouldn't say that the Jets, you're looking at the Jets saying, okay, well, they've honed in on him at this point because, frankly, the Jets in the aggregate, I really honestly believe they're going to end up interviewing 10, 12 people, you know, for that head coaching position. And I think where he's on a short list that I think is really interesting, you know, Houston is a fairly short list. You know, Matt Eberflus has been asked for there. Eric Bieniemy has been asked for there. And I think despite the fact that they don't have a draft pick, you know, a first round pick, and you know, this that team was a little jacked up by Bill O'Brien, I do believe that of the full collection there, other than maybe Justin Herbert with LA Chargers, you're dealing with a quarterback that should be a 10-12 year quarterback there, and there is some flexibility inside that organization as far as, you know, who the general manager will be. If it ends up being Nick Caserio, who I think they're really they're shaping things up, you know, to target him as a general manager, I think you could do worse for sure than Nick Caserio, who I know is definitely familiar with the background of Arthur Smith.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Charles, some of the rumors that have been flying around out there the past couple of weeks regarding the Jags job is maybe Urban Meyer taking the head coaching job there. What would you think if that ultimately comes to pass would be the fit for Urban Meyer in the NFL and in Jacksonville?
You know, I think Urban's an interesting guy just from the standpoint of I don't remember Urban's name not being inserted into any – it's insane to me the number of openings that Urban's name gets attached to. And I do think that Urban's camp absolutely, you know, promotes that. He's sort of like, I compare him a little bit to Josh McDaniels for the last couple of years. Every time there's an opening, you know, Josh McDaniels gets connected to it. And a lot of that has to do with his camp. My problem with Urban the last couple of years and really historically is that he loves the attention of the search. He's an all-time dabbler. He's a guy that, you know, he gets brought up and doesn't necessarily do anything to dissuade people from bringing him up in these coaching searches. And then, you know, down the stretch, the same thing happens repeatedly. And so, he's not fully on, he's not committed to it. I don't know if he wants to do it or he doesn't want to do it. Same thing's happening with Jacksonville. Same exact thing. The only difference is, I do think that there is a very strong affinity in Jacksonville for him as a head coaching candidate. I think there is a belief in Jacksonville that their setup, the ability to have a head coach, general manager, and quarterback hire all at once, really leans into this idea that Urban Meyer can build an NFL program. I don't know if that's true or not. I can tell you this: when Urban Meyer was leaving when Urban Meyer was leaving Ohio State's offense was already falling behind a little bit. You know, I think that the rest of college football was starting to catch up to Urban Meyer when he exited, and I think Ryan Day significantly changed and moved that program a step forward into the future. At least when you talk to NFL people about Ohio State and the schemes that they were running. And why, you know, so many guys are coming out of Ohio State and have the ability to be successful now, that worries me a little bit. I don't like NFL guys going, hey, the scheme, you know, it seemed to progress and get better after Urban Meyer left Ohio State. But I think this is about programs, and Jacksonville is really, really looking at, you know, how do we build a whole new program around this quarterback we think we could have for 15 years and a general manager and a coach. We need to solidify someone who can come in and rebuild this entire design and set something meaningful in place. I honestly can't tell you whether or not Urban Meyer can do that on an NFL level or not, but I can say this. He can't be this, hey, I don't know how committed I am guy, because you'll get stomped. You will get absolutely wiped out in the NFL if you are not 100% committed in it every single day, all the time.
Well, if Urban gets 12 mil from the Jags, maybe he'll pony up for an athletic scholarship. That'd be amazing. So,
12 million a year for Urban.
Charles. No, long story. That's amazing. Anyway. I mean, like that's an insane number. All right, so let's keep on the coordinator topic. Go ahead.
No, it's yeah.
Okay, sorry.
This is great. We were doing
okay. Let me ask you this, Charles. Yeah, this is good radio. That was an amazing segment. Let's trade dead air for a little bit. It's like tennis. All right. Let me ask you this, Mike Vrabel. How important would you say it is that he hires a defensive coordinator next year? How much would you attribute the lack of one to this team's awful defense? And do you have anyone in mind?
I think that it's important. I do think that it's a, you know, one of the factors. I don't want to say it's the overriding factor again. This is a team that went out and it earmarked free agent money for a couple of guys that they expected to be factors in the pass rush, and neither were factors in the pass rush. And I think it hurt them, you know, considerably. You can't push your chips on two guys and not even have one of them, you know, really work out or, you know, in the case of particularly Jadeveon Clowney, end up being, you know, healthy in the long run. So I think that played a big part in it. The one thing I would say about the coordinator spot there is the last time I think I looked at a team and I thought, hey, it would be good if Mike could delegate to a guy that he trusted. And, you know, you could see scheme improvement or, you know, just somebody there to operate on an everyday basis that doesn't also have to, you know, manage the entire team at the same time. I look at the Rams and I remember, I think I talked about this a little bit before with you guys, where I started to hear things about, you know, Wade Phillips and, hey, the scheme had gone a little bit stale. You had Sean McVay, who's obviously considered an offensive coach. He's definitely an offensive coach, but he was dabbling in defense, and it was like, why is he doing this? And then when they hired Brandon Staley away from the Chicago Bears, who had been the, you know, linebackers coach, actually away from the Denver Broncos, but he had been the linebackers coach in Chicago under Vic Fangio as well. It changed really how not only their defense operated from a personnel standpoint, but from what I had heard, it was, you know, basically Sean McVay had this ability to trust the guy that he brought in and completely refocus himself on other areas of the team. And I'm sure Mike Vrabel could use a little bit of that. And so I think I do think it's an important component that they should probably look at. I'm not a big fan of head coaches not named Bill Belichick who don't designate, all their coordinator positions. So as far as candidates, it's going to come down to scheme, you know, it's going to come down to the personnel and who's the right person to fit the personnel. So like, for example, I think if the 49ers lose Robert Saleh, they're going to go hard after Raheem Morris because there's a relationship there between Kyle Shanahan and Raheem Morris, and the scheme fits perfectly. They don't have to change anything, and there's a trust factor there. So for Mike, I think that's going to be something that's extremely important. Pay attention to the trust factor and the scheme factor. You don't want to be changing out, you know, what they do or remaking any of the personnel aspects for somebody who's going to come in.
Charles Robinson with Yahoo Sports is on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Charles, last thing for you here, looking ahead to the matchup for the Titans on Wild Card Weekend against the Ravens. What do you think of that matchup, and how much do you think Lamar Jackson has to prove in this game in terms of how he's viewed in the playoffs?
Well, what's interesting about, you know, Baltimore at this point is if you look at the balance of the season and you want to know what affected them the most within their scheme and why they couldn't do certain things this year, I think you take Ronnie Stanley out of the mix, the you know, perennial, you know, all Pro Bowl, almost, you know, probably all pro left tackle. And then, you know, Marshall Yanda not being there, I think really impacted the continuity of the line and their ability to, I think, consistently run the ball and scheme the way that they were able to at a high level last year. Now, a game like this, what I'm looking at is this is that opportunity for Lamar Jackson to once again show people, hey, you know what, I can throw. Like, I'm a guy, I don't have to expose myself and run for 100 and 125, 150 yards for us to have a successful offense. You know, Tennessee's because of, you know, what we've talked about, you know, the inability to get a pass rush completed and kind of where they are in terms of DVOA on defense, you know, this is the game that gives Lamar Jackson the opportunity to show people, oh, he can throw the football. And I think they're doing that a little bit better. I think Hollywood Brown is a guy that just a whole litany of problems for 8, 10, 12 games this season, and now all of a sudden that connection is starting to kind of get back to where Baltimore thought it could be. Dez Bryant is a guy that factored for them, you know, late in the season. They're starting to find some of the pieces to help him win. But again, it's a Lamar Jackson game. It really is. Like, if this guy can come out and he can throw for, you know, 250 yards against Tennessee and doesn't have to expose himself running. He can throw for 300 yards, which, go look at his season, has not been his game this year at all. You know, that's going to be an immense plus for Baltimore at this point. But I don't like this being a game where you have to have Lamar, you know, again, running for 150 yards for your offense to function correctly. This should be a game where he can throw the football. If he can't, you know, I don't know that Baltimore can beat Tennessee with him having to do, you know, be the guy who's running the ball for 150 yards. He's going to get hurt eventually. Like, he's gotten banged up a few times this season, and it's not the kind of game where he should have to expose himself like that.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports has been our guest here on Robbie and Retro. Charles, great stuff as always, my man. We appreciate you taking time to join us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. Stay safe.
Absolutely. You as well. When we come back, we will react to some of what Charles had to say there, looking ahead to potentially what a head coaching job could look like for Titans offensive coordinator Arthur Smith. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
As I told Joe yesterday, I'm like, look, I don't know if any coaching candidate gets six interviews. And you know, A, I don't know if a coach takes all six, which is kind of interesting. And then B, I just don't know how you do six interviews with six openings and you don't land one, particularly if you got a couple GMs, two out of 32. And I'd probably say three out of 32 if you ask John Robinson, who probably think he's the top in the field, top candidate in the field.
That was Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports here with us on the show in the last segment, looking ahead to Arthur Smith and his head coaching candidacy, looking around the NFL. There's been rumors that he is going to be interviewed at least on all six of the current head coaching vacancies in the NFL. And those six teams, of course, are the Atlanta Falcons, Detroit Lions, New York Jets, Houston Texans, LA Chargers, and the Jacksonville Jaguars. So, Joe, it seems like Arthur Smith, a very popular candidate in the NFL circles, with Charles reporting that at least two GMs have told him that he's the number one candidate on the board.
Yeah, now, of course, I tweet out a quote from Charles, some very interesting reactions. First of all, there's all these Buffalo fans like, yes, we're going to keep Daboll. I'm like, no, if Daboll's two, then he's still going to get a job probably.
Yes.
But great gift here from Walker Rhodes, you know, goodbye my sweet love, you know, Michael Scott from The Office, goodbye my lover, goodbye yes. my friend. But I will remind people, so last week Charles was like, he gave his opinion, like, I don't think he's gonna get a job because there's fewer openings than I thought. So I tweeted that, and all, and those Titans fans like, oh yes, out of the clear. And I was like, no guys, he just said he thinks he won't get a job. I would not take this as like, absolutely you're in the clear,
right?
But it's very interesting here when you talk about two GM saying he's number one. It's an interesting thought on Kevin Stefanski too. The idea of that, you know, coaches who can marry the power run game with a modern passing game, as obviously Arthur Smith has done and the Browns have done this year. So, you know, like he said, I don't know if he's going to take all these interviews. I mean, he's got to have some time to do other things, you know, in life. But if you have a bunch of them, it's, you'd really probably have to bomb out over and over again to not get a job.
Yeah, and I like the phrase that Charles threw out there, and that is scheme versatility. And I think if you watch this Titans offense, it's pretty clear. I mean, the way that Arthur Smith is able to scheme things up, the different ways in which this Titans offense can attack the defense. Now, a lot of that is personnel. I mean, Tannehill's done a great job. Obviously, there's not another running back in the league like Derrick Henry, so that certainly helps if you're Arthur Smith, but his ability to really diagnose what the defense is doing out there and then find different ways to attack it, it's got to be attractive around the league. And I realize, like, there's more to being a head coach in the NFL than just calling plays. And we've seen time and time again examples of guys who have been really good coordinators who don't know what it's like and don't have what it takes to be a successful head coach in the NFL. But Arthur Smith, it sounds like if you're a Titans fan really hoping that he's on next year – and back with the group and back in the fold offensively, I don't know if that's going to be the case, given how much interest appears to be out there in this interviewing process.
Yeah, I mean, you probably shouldn't be too optimistic. And the thing with Arthur Smith is, let's remember that he was kept around here multiple. So he goes back to Wisenhunt, right? Wisenhunt, Malarkey and Vrabel both keep him. And he is a guy who, I mean, look, that's the one question we had about him going into last year is what kind of a play caller is, but he very good position coach, very respected in the building, motivator, fiery guy on the practice field. I mean, he's not like the wonky nerd drawing up plays in the corner. You know, he's a coach, and I think he'll impress in interviews, and I think he's got a well-rounded resume now to show teams. And look, I mean, I will say that with Daboll, the thing about him is I'm blown away by the progress of Josh Allen. And I don't know how you couldn't look at him. If you have a young quarterback, because, you know, obviously Arthur Smith inherits Ryan Tannehill, who's been in the league a long time. He's done great things with him. But Josh Allen, the steps he's made under Daboll, that's where I would look at him and say, man, that is an attractive guy. I think Eric Bieniemy too, in terms of putting that whole offense together, which is the most creative offense in the league, and Mahomes' progress. You know, of course, Mahomes had the benefit of sitting out that 1 year behind Alex Smith. But those two stand out. I mean, look, I think offensive coaches are just overwhelmingly more attractive right now. You know, the Vrabel hire was kind of going against the grain even when the Titans made it a couple years ago. But the offensive, everybody wants, you know, schematics that are cut edge and that work. And obviously there's other parts of being a coach, but I think that's the number one factor and trait that most of these owners and GMs are looking for.
And Mike Vrabel yesterday in his press conference with the media was asked about Arthur Smith and the rumors floating around of him being of potential interest to other teams around the league. Here is what Mike Vrabel had to say.
Arthur's been in this organization for a lot of years, I'd say close to a decade. And, you know, he's given everything that he was asked to and then some in whatever role that he was in. When I got here, he was highly recommended by people within this organization. He was highly recommended by Mike Mularkey as a coach that you could trust, that was loyal, that was diligent, that was hardworking, and he's earned everything that he's got.
So that was Vrabel on Arthur Smith, and it has been pretty fascinating just to see like the rise of Arthur Smith going from coaching the tight ends. All of a sudden you're the offensive coordinator. And really thinking back on that search, like, it's interesting that he basically went to Vrabel and said, yeah, I'd like to interview for the job. Gets the job. It starts off 2-4, and it's not looking great offensively. The quarterback switch happens, and everything has just been pretty much gold offensively since then. Like, the meteoric rise of Arthur Smith over the past couple of years, pretty incredible to watch.
Yeah, I mean, he's a quality control guy here going back to 2011, which, of course, those guys make very little money. He finally gets full-time. Like, he's not a full-time tight ends coach until 16. Mularkey elevates him from assistant tight ends coach in Mularkey's first year as head coach, and then he goes on from there. And obviously with Arthur, and I just mentioned not making money, of course, with Arthur Smith, it's going to be, you know, the funny thing is once he becomes a head coach, you'll really see some fun stories on Fred Smith, obviously his dad, the founder CEO of FedEx, you know. And of course, listen, I'll tell you, like, if I was that guy, I'd probably be sipping champagne somewhere. Okay. But also I think sometimes what you see is people who are, you know, have that kind of, you know, they know he's going to inherit billions someday, also had that chip on the shoulder to, you know what, I'm still going to work harder than everybody and prove myself on my own. And I think it's clearly what Arthur Smith has done, but it's a fascinating story, you know, that you have a guy who is an heir to billions who has gone this route. And I'm talking a lot of years, you know, defensive intern and administrative assistant at Ole Miss, you know, and grad at North Carolina, where he played, you know, a bunch of QC, which is quality control years, you know, where, again, you make very little money. Most for other people, that means more than some people, but still proved himself. And like Vrabel said, earned everything he's got. And I think once he gets into these interviews, I think he's going to blow people away.
When we come back, how would Joe and I rank the job openings currently available in the NFL that maybe Arthur Smith could land one of these jobs? We'll do that on the other side when we come back. Hey, college football season, it's down to the final game, the national championship, as Ohio State squares off against Alabama. And ESPN The Game Nashville has you covered, as the college football finale will be on 102.5 The Game and ESPN 94.9 with the kickoff at 7 o'clock. College football national championship coverage is brought to you by Boombas Pizza and Craft House, Coleman Tractor, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Electronic Express. So looking forward to the national championship game coming up next week. We'll be right back here on Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Titans fans, the place to check out the game this Sunday is Corner Pub, with locations in Bellevue, Brentwood, downtown, and Cool Springs. Plus, they will have great beer specials, including $1 off of Yazoo and Happen Harry's draft beers, plus Happen Harry's bucket specials. Don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show live from the new Corner Pub in Cool Springs this Sunday. Join us from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. prior to the Titans taking on the Baltimore Ravens. The NFL pregame show features Jared Stillman and former Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders, and is brought to you by Wholesale Inc., powered by Rumble On, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota dealers. Remember, Corner Pub locations will be following social distancing and safety guidelines, so make sure you keep that in mind. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning. And Joe, you look ahead, we've talked about Arthur Smith, his potential candidacy for job openings in the NFL. And right now, six head coaching jobs are open in the NFL. The Jags, the Texans, the Jets, the Chargers, the Lions, and the Falcons. So Joe, if you're Arthur Smith, or if you're any candidate, looking ahead and kind of ranking how you would view these jobs, where do you start that list? What's the most attractive job on this list, in your opinion?
Before I get that, real quick, let me just tell you how stupid Twitter is again. I mean, like, this has just gone nuts on the Bills Mafia thing with Charles. So, like, everyone now is taking this as, like, oh, you're saying Dabble sucks, huh? You're ridiculous. It's like, dude, if Dabble's the number two guy, he's going to get a job too.
There's more than one job available.
Yeah, well, it's like, so this guy who covers the Bills, Joe Marino, is like, this is ridiculous. You know, this is like disrespect to Brian Daboll. I'm like, that's not what it says. It just says that they have him number one over number two Daboll, which means I also like Daboll. God. All right. Anyway, let me rank my number one. I got to go Chargers. Chargers. You want me to go through all of them real quick?
Yeah. That works.
Okay. This is how I rank them. Okay, so Chargers. I'll do quick Chargers, the QB, some nice pieces. I think that they are set up to have success. Texans, I go Texans over Jaguars, because even though we're not sure about Texans ownership and everything, the Jaguars have a potentially really attractive situation. Trevor Lawrence, all that draft capital. Man, I'm worried about their owner. And he has messed things up, and he's talking about how he's going to have control still. So I'm going to give the Texans a slight nod. Deshaun Watson is a great thing to inherit. I mean, it's amazing to me that you have the quality of quarterback in some of these jobs that are open that you do. Because a lot of times it's open job, need a coach, need a quarterback. I'm going fourth with the Falcons because they have a good owner. Their quarterback situation is questionable. Matt Ryan's getting up there. But good ownership is a big deal. And so I put fourth. And then you talk about bad ownership. Let's go last. Jets. Woody Johnson, they're a disaster. But of course we're going Lions last. Of course we're going Lions last. And not only because of just the horrifically joke ownership that they've had for decades. I mean, Bob Quinn was a terrible general manager. It's amazing. Like, Bob Quinn's friends with John Robinson, and Patriots guy, you know. I mean, he made consistently awful choices time after time. And it was always like outside the box choices on defense, and they all are bad. So that's a bad roster. Right now, the Lions, that defense is a complete overhaul. So you're inheriting a bad situation. And Stafford, again, good, very good player. I think they might move on from him. But if there's ever an offseason and we're listing job attractiveness, just start from the bottom with the Lions and move your way up.
I would have been very disappointed with you had you put the Lions anywhere but sixth on this list, just given how much we've talked about the Lions over the course of the past couple of weeks here on the show. I'm going to go a slightly different direction with my list. I'm putting the Jags at number one for this reason. You know, you get what I think could be a generational quarterback coming in Trevor Lawrence. You've got the first pick. You're projected to have the most cap space in the entire NFL this offseason. So you talk about an opportunity with some good pieces in there already. I like James Robinson. I like the offensive line. DJ Chark, I think, especially if you give him a quarterback that can actually throw the ball down the field, could be a pretty good receiver in this league. I like a lot of the pieces that Jacksonville has. I hear what you're saying about the ownership, and that is the trepidation that I have. But I think Jacksonville is in a situation where, especially if Trevor Lawrence comes in and he hits immediately, I don't think they're that far away from turning things around. So I'm putting Jacksonville at one. I'll go with the Chargers at number two. Everything you said about Herbert, I love the piece that they have there. Keenan Allen still there, Joey Bosa on defense. So still lots of good things to build on. The drawback for the Chargers is obviously you're in the same division as the Chiefs. You know, that's going to be a problem for the next 10, 15 years with Patrick Mahomes at the helm, but still a lot to like about the Chargers. I put the Texans at number three, and the Texans, honestly, with Deshaun Watson in the conversation, they would be number one because I think Watson is that good. But it's pretty incredible when you look at it, the amount of damage that Bill O'Brien has done to this team. They don't have a lot of draft capital. They don't have a first-round pick this year due to the Laremy Tunsil trade. They're bottom 10 in the league in projected cap space. Their defense is absolutely atrocious. It could take years to really overhaul that defense and fix it. Really, Deshaun Watson being as good as he is the only reason I have them at number three, because I think there's a lot of mess going on everywhere else with the Texans. It's going to take some serious rebuilding. You've got the general manager situation as well. But given how good Deshaun Watson is, I've got them at number three. I've got the Jets at number four. It's a lot more interesting to me now, and I think if you trade, you know, Sam Darnold and take Justin Fields, then you can get even more draft capital. But you got, you know, a first-round pick, obviously the second overall pick this year. You got another first-rounder that you got from the Jamal Adams trade and another third-rounder as well. Like, the draft capital is there. It's New York. The market's insane. And the division is getting better, obviously, with the Bills and Miami on the rise. But I'll still put the Jets at number four. I've got the Falcons at five. You know, Matt Ryan, I don't know how much he's got left. I don't know how much Julio Jones has got left. And it feels like that offense is about a year or two away from needing just a complete overhaul at that point. I do love the ownership situation. I think they're good there. But the cap space right now is a problem. They got the third fewest amount of cap space in the entire NFL. So because of that, because of the quarterback situation and how much time, I don't know how much time's left for Matt Ryan. I've got the Falcons at five and then the Lions at six. I mean, it's the Lions. I don't think anything else really needs to be said about that. So I went a slightly different direction than you did, Joe Rexroad.
Yeah, I hear you on the Caps. The Falcons are definitely in purgatory there. They got a lot of things to do. And you're right. I mean, look, the Texans are interesting because, like, Cal McNair, it's not like you have necessarily a great ownership situation there. You don't know about GM. I mean, look, I just feel like if you're talking about the most, like, I like Justin Herbert a lot. And again, I put him number one. And I think Trevor Lawrence is going to be great. But I know Deshaun Watson's great, you know? Like, yeah. I know he's great. And I just feel like, you know, you don't have to do that much to put them back in a situation of being competitive because of him. And then ownership to me, that's just the difference maker with Falcons Jets for me. It's just, I mean, on the ownership front here, and the Jags is concerning too, but the Jets and Lions, I mean, oh, I mean, it's a bleep show for sure. So that's a good bottom two. But yeah, I'm glad that you, I feel like maybe I have had a positive influence on you, Robbie. Maybe not. Maybe you would have gone Lions all the way, but like, it's a no brainer. And this is good. We are like-minded on the Detroit Lions.
A mighty team that will not yield.
That's right. You've definitely had a positive influence on me, Joe Rexroad. I credit you fully with my now just total disrespect for the Detroit Lions.
Unfortunately, my parenting there still hasn't worked because there's all this, where are the Lions going to draft? You know, I mean, I can't stop at my own house.
But, poor kid.
There's only so much you can do, Joe. So of all the openings, all six, where does Arthur Smith land if he gets one?
Ooh, that's a good question. Look, I think if I'm the Chargers, I think he's really attractive to me. And, you know, you've got your quarterback in place. You feel good about Herbert. You still need a running game to go along with it. And I realize Eckler was hurt for most of this season. But I think you're not that far away from being competitive with the Chargers. I mean, how many games this year did they just absolutely screw up at the end? I mean, it was pretty incredible to watch, like, them and the Falcons figure out different ways to lose games. You know, I know Titans fans' worst scenario is him ended up in Houston. I think that's fairly likely. I think there's heavy interest there, and Charles kind of echoed that he's on the short list in Houston as well. But if I'm Arthur Smith, I think the most attractive situation for me, just in terms of being able to compete right away, may be the Chargers. Long term, I still think it may be the Jags with Trevor Lawrence, but I think the Chargers, they're not that far away from being competitive.
Yeah, I'm going to go Houston, and maybe that's a little bit of wishful, you know, media story thinking. But, you know, the Titans take Vrabel away from them, and now the Texans can take Arthur Smith away, and we can have a little rivalry in the division with mentor protege. And not to mention the Vrabel-Frank Reich rivalry of Reich beat him out for the Colts job. You know, it's all kinds of personal rivalries abound. I mean, look, I have no feel for – I think he's got a shot at all these. I really do. But if you're him, yeah, I would agree. If you had your pick of those two, I would take the Chargers job. I would not be too hesitant of the Texans job. I definitely want to know who the GM is going to be. And I definitely want it written down that it will not be Bill O'Brien.
Well, and some of this is – yeah, definitely not Bill O'Brien. Some of this is expectations too, like – you know, it's the NFL, and I get it. You're never guaranteed, you know, more than 2-3 years anyway. But if you're Arthur Smith and you're going into a situation where maybe you have a young quarterback, and maybe he ends up getting the Jets job, and Justin Fields is coming in, and it's going to take a while to get that Jets roster to a point where it can be competitive. I mean, they're light years away from that right now. How much leash are you given? Like, how much are you assured that you're going to continue to have a job in the NFL? Like, as long as I realize you can't really ever be assured of anything, but how much leash do you get? Because that's a question I would want to know if I'm Arthur Smith, depending on which job I'd like to take. Like, I think if you're the Chargers and you've got a team with Justin Herbert and you've got some good pieces, like I said, Keenan Allen there, Joey Bosa on the other side of the ball, there are pieces in place to be competitive right from the jump. Does that affect how long of a leash you have if you're Arthur Smith? That factors into this discussion if I'm him as well.
Yeah, and then also, as you said earlier when you were talking about the Chargers job, I mean, you got the Chiefs twice a year.
Yeah.
So that could you could look at that either way. Like, okay, that's your measuring stick, and you got to try to beat them out to win a division and get a home playoff game. You also – maybe there's a little more leeway because of that. You know, it depends so much of it. But, I mean, I think for the most part in this league, you know, like college football, there's wide differences between different programs and booster groups and timelines given to coaches. I think for the most part in this league, just expect it to be short.
Were y'all surprised in the conversation with Charles Robinson that he didn't talk about Eric Bieniemy more? And that Eric Bieniemy may not be viewed as the number one candidate right now? Because it feels like in the last year, ever since the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, that that's been the number one name that people have mentioned, is that when jobs open, Bieniemy is getting one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised.
Well, I'll tell you why I believe.
Go ahead, Joe.
I'm sorry. I think the reason is because Andy Reid is viewed as an offensive genius. And so whoever his OC is, you know, people are going to be like, yeah, but it's Andy. Plus, Matt Nagy has not been great. You know, so I think those two factors kind of work against him. I think the play calling aspect of it is overrated, because a head coach isn't going to call plays anyway. But I think those hurt him. I also still think he's going to end up getting a job this cycle.
Yeah, I think he's going to get a job as well. Ryan Porth, very quickly putting you on the spot. Where does Arthur Smith end up next year?
I would probably agree with you, Robbie, and say the Chargers.
Okay.
Unless Jim Harbaugh goes for that job.
Yeah.
He used to play for the Chargers. Harbaugh with Justin Herbert would be – on paper, an attractive duo. If it's not Harbaugh for that job, then maybe Arthur.
Joe, do you think Jim Harbaugh still has the same level of attractiveness league-wide based on how rocky it's been at Michigan?
I mean, I would hope not, and I would think not. But all it takes is one team, and that is there's some obvious ties there. And, you know, think of the T-shirts, Harbert. The Harbert T-shirts could just go nuts.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, I should move out there and sell them.
Nice dad joke.
You've got to get some credit for that if that is happening. When we come back, we'll switch gears to wrap up the show and get into the Preds. Training camp is underway. Pecorine talked yesterday. How realistic is a bounce back season for number 35 in gold? We'll discuss that when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I thought that the energy level was high. The execution was strong. I told the guys I was really happy with their attention to detail and the things that we tried to implement. They not only worked hard in today's practice, but I thought mentally they were engaged and executed the details that we wanted to have. And when we were in, you know, battle situations and things like that, the competitive level was high. So good first start to a first day.
That was Nashville Predators head coach John Hines after the first official day of on-ice practice yesterday in training camp for the Predators. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning. And Joe, you look at it, obviously a short time, short turnaround period for this Predators team. They've got 9 days now at this point to get ready for their opening night contest against Columbus on January the 14th. So not a ton of time to get ready in training camp. But a big part of this season is going to be goaltending. You've got a different schedule this year. It's more of a baseball-style schedule where you're playing the same team twice in a row, sometimes back-to-back nights. A lot of times you'll have three games in four nights. So a condensed schedule going to be challenging, and you're going to need both goaltenders. And we know, based on his track record, Pekka Rinne did not have the type of season last year that we've grown accustomed to seeing. And obviously being 38 years old now, father time is starting to catch up. So as you look at it this year from a goaltending situation, knowing what UC Saros is, what he's become, how he was coming on at the end of last year, and based on Rinne and his age, Joe Rexrode, how realistic do you think a bounce-back season is for Pekka Rinne coming back into the fold this year? And what do you think that looks like?
It's a great question. And it's just, if this was a normal season, I think it would be more like, okay, he's the backup and, you know, way more rest, and it's just a different situation. And so, look, that could be a real nice backup for you who has a much smaller workload, and you feel good about the potential situation. But it's just more demanding with this schedule. So it's a huge storyline for this team. They need them both to be really good. And I don't know. I mean, I feel like, you know, he just was so all over the place last year. And I think it's still, for me, difficult when you see the mistakes in front of a goaltender that the Preds made way too often last year. How much of it, you know, is on the defense, how much is not necessarily on the goaltender? I think that was true sometimes on some of those rough nights Pekka had. But still, the bottom line is, I mean, that's why it's the most important position on the ice. So I'm really fascinated to see how it goes. He has a child now. So he has now joined the most of the rest of the roster. I mean, this has got to be the most baby boom team in the last 2 years in the league. So is that good or bad? I mean, at least by now you would think he'd get back on the good sleep schedule, because you know, we talked about Corey Davis last week after his daughter's born. Those early days are rough. So hopefully he's got a nice rest thing going on, because he's going to need it.
Yeah, he's going to need it, and this is going to be an interesting season for everybody. And Pekka, I mean, he's in an interesting spot here. I mean, you're in the final year of your contract. You're 38 years old. Obviously, you've been so accomplished. You've been the face of this franchise. You're the most important, most, you know, popular player in the history of the team. And it's not the same. I think people expecting Rinne to get back to the level he was a couple years ago when he was a Vezina Trophy winner and, you know, being one of the best goalies in the NHL, that's just, I don't think it's going to happen anymore. I think, you know, he's just moved on from that point, and obviously a different role for him this year. But it is interesting just based on where he is in his career. I've said it before. I think a lot of people are counting him out heading into this season. And if there's one thing I've learned about that guy, I'm not going to count him out. Now, what does that look like? How many starts does he get in a 56-game season? I don't know. My guess would be somewhere around 25 starts, probably at maximum, for Pekka Rinne, based on his age and based on what I think smart in him handling kind of his minutes and his responsibility there. But you can sense that there's a little bit of motivation there for him to go out and prove that last year was a fluke. He knows he didn't play well. And Pekka talked about that yesterday when he was talking to the media for the first time in training camp. Here's what Pekka Rinne had to say.
I think personally, just looking for a bounce back season. I mean, obviously not happy about last season, and not happy about my play and level of play, and you know, being really getting ready physically and mentally these past 4 months since the playoffs. And but just very excited. I mean, at this point in my career, you know, only thing I'm thinking about is winning, and not so much personal things. But at the same time, I do want to step up personally and bounce back from last year.
So that was Pekka yesterday in his media availability. And I think you know, him, hearing him talk about, you know, at this point in his career, the only thing he really cares about is winning. That is such a Pekka thing to say, and I think that's true. But I do think if you know him and you know how competitive he is, that there's got to be a drive there for him to come out and prove that last year was not the goaltender that he is, and he wants to come out and prove to everyone he's still got what it takes to play at a high level in the NHL.
Oh, no doubt about it. And look, I mean, Pekka Rinne, the guy, he has a very rigorous off-season program. I'm sure he went through it again. It's why he's still, you know, playing at the level he is at that age. So you can expect him, you know, to be in good shape. You mentioned maybe 25 starts, you know, in a 56 game. Now, if it were an 82 game normal spaced out schedule, what would he get? 30 this year? Would it be about a 50-30 split for Saros? That's what I would guess.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, the condensed schedule's got to be part of it, right? I mean, you rarely do you see goaltenders play back-to-back nights, and I think the Predators, they've got 10 sets of those this year on their schedule. So, I mean, you're talking about a ton of games in a very short amount of time. So you're going to have both goalies, and obviously, you know, I throw those numbers out. We don't know what injuries are going to look like. We certainly this year don't know what COVID situations are going to look like, but assuming he's healthy and available the whole time, right around 20, somewhere in the neighborhood, 2025, just based on the schedule, I think that's what you're looking at if you're the Predators and Pekka Rinne. And obviously, a 56-game schedule, that's a pretty significant number.
Right. I mean, it's just more demanding than it would have been. So there is pressure on him. What is your percentage chance that this is his last year, that he retires after this year?
Oh, I mean, I'm going to put it at better than 50%. I really am. I mean, I think a lot of it is probably based on the way the team plays, and if they feel like they're close to competing for a cup, maybe this year, maybe you have a decent run, maybe do better than people are expecting this year and get to a playoff and maybe do a little bit of damage in the playoffs. Maybe that affects the way that he views it. Obviously, his play is going to have a lot to do with it as well, but I think just based on his age and based on the way that he's been trending the last year or 2 years, I would put the percentages right now at a little bit over 50%. This is it, which I think would suck if this was it, because who knows what the fan presence is going to look like. And if this is his last year and like nobody's able to watch him in person, that would be awful.
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah. You want to be able to go out, you know, with a full building. Obviously they'd have him back for, you know, so you'd have him back. They should have him back for like a month of, you know,
celebration. And, yeah.
Yeah. The next year. But yeah, like that's interesting. I would put it, I just feel like I'd put it around 80%. I mean, I'm just guessing, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm just guessing, but just the trend of him, his performance, the age, he's a kid now. I mean, I think you're exactly right. How does this, what's the trajectory of the team after this year? If it continues as is and they, you know, barely get in the playoffs or don't make the playoffs, I think it really increases the chances, you know, but maybe if they are a surprising team this year and make some kind of a run, then it probably goes down.
That is going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rexroad. Joe Rexroad, it was great stuff for you today. I'm glad we got your poll question into the show as well. It deserved that credit.
I'm a technological whiz. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. We'll be back all week long to look ahead to the Titans and the Ravens game coming up on Sunday. Make sure you're tuning in to Darren Donick and Chase today. Jeff Fisher, former Titans coach, joining the program at noon. Always interesting insight from Jeff Fisher, so make sure you're tuned in for that. Darren Donick and Chase, speaking of those guys, they are coming up next. You've been listening to Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.